There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
All right, everybody. Hello. Hello. Hi, and welcome along to Film Franchise Four Nights on the Cult Popture Podcast. You are joined once more for the 180-something time in a row. It is I, Alexander AJ Jones, and I'm joined...
Do you want to know how many episodes we've done?
How many?
Let me have a look. We have, on our main feed, we've done... This will be our 380th episode.
Nice. I was specifically looking at franchises, but that's a more impressive number, so why not go with that? Right, everybody. It's our 380th episode, and I have been here for most of them, and so has Richard, Richard A.J. Martin, the other co-host of the Cult Popture Podcast, where every fortnight we discuss a different film franchise. Richard, what did we discuss? What are we going to discuss this week?
Well, if all goes according to plan, we are going to be discussing the Addams Family franchise. Now, this is one of those franchises that started in a different medium decades earlier. We're going to be talking, we'll have a little bit of context for, you know, where we're coming from for these films, but we are going to be starting off with the Addams Family feature film, which came out in 1991, that was followed up 2 years later by Addams Family Values in 1993, and then 5 years later there was a direct-to-video film called Addams Family Reunion, and then more recently there's been two animated films, The Addams Family and The Addams Family 2, in 2019 and 2021.
Yeah. Now, what's your relationship with the Addams Family prior to watching them for this podcast?
I think I watched it growing up. I definitely watched The Munsters, I can say that. Like, we were more of a Munsters household, I would say. I think, and doing my research, that like when the first film came out in 1991, the producers sort of had to like pull it from obscurity to get it made because The Munsters was a lot more popular. And now that's kind of because of these films. And of course, like, you know, at the moment, it's like the most sort of famous it's been, or at least one of the characters is, because of the Tim Burton series Wednesday on Netflix. Yeah, it was due to like the syndication rights or something like that. The Munsters was on a lot more. But then Addams Family had a bunch of different iterations, which we'll go into. But yeah, I've seen bits and pieces of the first three films, at least, growing up on TV, and familiar enough with the characters kind of thing. But I can't explicitly remember, like, having a relationship with it.
Well, I'm somewhat similar. Can we even say that, like, when you say you watched it as a kid, what exactly? Because wasn't the show from like the 60s, and then they made a couple more, and there've been a couple more, and it's all over the show. And what I think is interesting,
it's possible to watch shows from several decades. I mean, we're talking about films from a few decades ago.
That's true. So, but I was more asking, did you watch the original show? Did you watch the animated series? Did you watch the
original
show?
Original show. Right. Prime used to play like Happy Days, Brady Bunch, Beverly Hillbillies, The Munsters.
Yeah.
And I would watch a lot of that.
I watched a lot of Happy Days and MASH on Prime in like, what, 2005? Didn't really catch The Addams Family. A bit of Get Smart, you know, that sort of thing. But Because what I think separates, and this can be a prevailing discussion prior to getting into the films themselves, because, and whenever we do one of these types of franchises, I always rattle off the other ones we've done like it. So we've done franchises that are based in something that isn't movies before, that are more like, these are more the movie adaptations of this pop cultural juggernaut that everyone's familiar with. Yu-Gi-Oh!, The Muppets, Scooby-Doo, even, is a great example. And what I think sets the Addams Family apart from all those is there, when I think of Scooby-Doo, despite the live-action films or the artistic reimaginings in other series, there is a definitive house model that I, the Hanna-Barbera Scooby-Doo that I think of. When I think of Addams Family, it's like how people describe having different levels of aphantasia, where like, I can picture an apple in my head, but other people picture sort of an amorphous apple shape. And that's what thinking what the Addams Family characters are supposed to look like is like, right? Mm. Because there is no, I don't think there's any ubiquitous pop cultural definitive version design of them. And I think that's
interesting. I would say these days it's probably the two live action films from 91 and 93.
It may be, yeah.
Those are probably
the
most iconic. If you got people to picture the Addams Family in their mind, that's probably what they're picturing if they have that ability.
Shout out to all our listeners with aphantasia. We still love you, even if you can't picture it.
The idea of the Addams Family dates back further than that original TV series. It's from a series of, what I was surprised to learn, like one panel comics that were like in the New Yorker, like similar to like the Far Side kind of thing, are by a guy called Charles Addams. And
the, with two D's?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And so our unpaid intern, Rachel, has done a lot of work this week. Again, more work than we have done. And read through, Rachel sent through just explaining what they've done, and we'll be coming back to Rachel's differences throughout the episode. But Rachel specifically read The World of Chaz Addams, Chaz Addams' Favorite Haunts, and Addams and Evil, an album of cartoons. There's a book called The Addams Family and Evolution that advertises itself as the most comprehensive collection available, but couldn't get a copy in time for the episode, and we'll provide some more thoughts if necessary. Once she gets a copy of that. There were a solid amount of racial stereotypes apparently in these, but he was a cartoonist born in 1912, so it shouldn't be too surprising. Also has given
Addams Family is nearly 100 years old then. Wait, when did he make the Addams Family?
Yeah, well, he didn't make them when he was 11.
Yeah, no, true.
But just some fun facts about Charles Addams. So this is like essentially just proving that this guy has the chops for, like, the macabre, you know?
Mm.
He once worked for a true crime magazine called True Detective, where his job was to clean up images of corpses to make them appropriate for publication.
Oh, God.
And this is, like, you know, pre-Photoshop and stuff. Like, how would you even do that?
Yeah.
He has been romantically or sexually linked to Greta Garbo, Joan Fontaine, and Jackie Kennedy months after the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Again, very macabre.
His second wife, Barbara, was a lawyer who took control of the TV and movie rights for the Addams Family and tried to convince Charles to take out a life insurance policy on himself. Supposedly, his own lawyer mentioned the like last thing he'd seen this in was Double Indemnity, the film.
Amazing. Okay.
He married his third and final wife, T, in a pet cemetery. While they apparently both held animal remains, they nicknamed their shared estate the Swamp.
This dude sounds insufferable to hang around with.
Right? Yeah. And finally, he died of a heart attack while parking his car. Supposedly, his wife, T, considered this quite fitting and said he's always been a car buff, so it's a nice way to go.
Oh, yeah. I think everything in the Addams Family, I think car buff.
So he, it's like, have you ever read all the, like, the facts about, like, Mary Shelley apparently, like, lost her virginity on her mother's grave?
No, I haven't read
And it's
that.
Like the original goth.
Yeah, cool. Badass. Badass.
But yeah, so Rachel's done an extensive amount of work, sent through a massive list of changes from the comics. With Rachel's permission, we'll make that available to everyone to read later on, but I will be cherry picking things throughout to highlight. So yeah, the Addams Family, as I mentioned, you had a few different iterations, but the sort of the core idea of this family, as told by Charles Addams himself, was Gomez and Pugsley are enthusiastic. Morticia is even in disposition, muted, witty, sometimes deadly. Grandma Frump is foolishly good-natured. Wednesday is her mother's daughter. A closely knit family, the real head being Morticia, although each of the others is a definite character, except for Grandma, who is easily led. Many of the troubles they have as a family are due to Grandma's fumbling, weak character. The house is a wreck, of course, but this is a house-proud family just the same, and every trapdoor is in good repair. Money is no problem.
Yes, right. And I guess for those unfamiliar with the Addams Family entirely, the whole joke is that they are, like, very goth-looking, a very goth-looking family who sort of have a lot of horror movie monster characteristics, but for the most part are humans. And from what I understood, the Munsters was the opposite. That was, they are monsters, but they live
behave like humans. Yeah, yeah.
These are humans that behave like monsters.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they're horrified by normal things and they love the macabre. There was, before we get into the 1991 film, you sent me a link to, there was a 1977 TV film called Halloween with the New Addams Family, which I didn't watch, but you said you were going to. So,
and
AJ,
I didn't.
What was that about? What?
I'm so sorry I ran out of time, but it could be a cool one to revisit for a film franchise follow-ups, maybe.
Well, there's one more interesting one that I would probably rather do, is emphasis on do, is that in 1972, as part of the new Scooby-Doo movies, the Addams Family crossed over with a lot of the original cast from the 1964 TV series reprising their role. This is the first time they appeared in animation. They did an episode called Wednesday is Missing, and due to the rights, it's like the only episode not available in the US, so it's like considered this rare, hard... I've got a link to it so we can watch it, but be an interesting thing. And then fans responded so well to that there was like two or three animated Addams Family shows after that.
Doesn't Wednesday is Missing sound like a mid-2000s emo band or something like that, you know?
The show randomly was hugely popular in Australia.
Right.
One of those weird things. And it spawned a game called Fester's Quest. So our other unpaid intern, if you're listening, Fester's Quest, hunt that down. Let's see what format it was on.
You're talking to Vinny, the guy that...
Yeah.
Plays licensed video games based off our franchises and gives us a rundown for in our Cult Elders episodes.
Yeah. So, yeah, Fester's Quest on the NES, generally considered to be one of the worst games ever made.
Nice, nice. Can I tell you the biggest influence the Addams Family had in my life before seeing these movies?
No.
Great. Let's move on then.
No, go on.
And maybe you had this too, actually, because I was about to say it's because I was raised Christian, but maybe you might have experienced this too. I would go to school camps in Woodend. It happened. Mm-hmm. It was at multiple school camps, and these were run by Christians, and they'd get you to pray to their God before dinner, which is like, what if there's like Muslim students or whatever, you know? Like, they just have to thank the Christian God for their dinner. But anyway,
Do they make you specify?
Yeah, yeah.
Christian God, for this
dinner. Thank you, specifically the Judeo-Christian God. They would turn it into a game, and I've heard like people say like there was a Superman one where they'd go, "Thank you, Lord, for giving us food," and all these 8-year-olds have to sing that before they eat dinner. But the one that we did at Woodend Christian Camp when I was 8, 9, 10 years old went, "We're thirsty and we're hungry. We want to fill our tummies. We know the food is yummy, and so we thank the Lord." Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Etc., etc. And if that is not a Christian boomer's idea of what is culturally relevant for 9-year-olds in 2004 or 2005. I don't know what is.
I can tell you, I did not have that experience.
No?
Obviously very, very familiar with the theme song that you, you know, sung to the tune of there. And I, you know, had parodies of it all my life, you know, inescapable. But no, yeah, not specifically that.
Interesting. And so, yeah, I would say that that theme song was, until probably the Wednesday TV show came out and I got more information purely by osmosis because I didn't watch it, that theme song was predominantly what I knew about Adam's Family before going into these films, I think.
Yeah.
And you'd never know it because they do not fucking use it for like three films, really. Yeah.
Apparently, Barry Sonnenfeld, who directed the film, didn't want to use it at all, but included it because the trailer had it in it and people were like, oh my god, they're using the song.
It has that vibe of the director thinks that his vision is above that. And we'll get more into it, especially with the two animated films. But yeah, so Barry Sonnenfeld, who we've talked about very recently, directed the first three Men in Black films, directed Wild Wild West, which we covered on Patreon recently. And of course, Richard directed one of our favorite films, Big Trouble, which is like Arrested Development.
I think he also directed that, well, one of your favorite, well, at least one of your favorite movie stars, that the cat movie with Kevin Spacey.
And we do the Barry Sonnenfeld joke every time. So this movie is a live action reimagining of these various machinations of Adams Family over the years. Who have we got? We've got Raul Julia as Gomez Adams. We've got Angelica Houston as Morticia. And Jesus Christ, the sexiest on-screen performance by an actress like ever, right?
And an actor, like the two of them.
Totally. Their relationship is fucking...
couple goals.
Intoxicating.
Yeah.
Intoxicating. You've got Christopher Lloyd as Uncle Fester and... I don't know, like, Christopher Lloyd is so iconic to me because of Back to the Future. And then I remember one day thinking, like, have I even seen any other Christopher Lloyd movies? And I've seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, I've seen The Hay Owl, the movie. And...
but, like, this is a fairly sizable, like, next to Back to the Future is Fester, Christopher Lloyd's most well-known.
Should we check his IMDb for like well-known for sort of thing? He had just come off the back of doing back-to-back
To the Future.
Yeah. back to the Future. And they wanted to get him, but they weren't sure they'd be able to. So there's a few other names thrown around. Danny DeVito, Jack Nicholson. I think their original choice...
Jack Nicholson!
Yeah,
Jesus
their original
Christ.
Choice was Anthony Hopkins, but he turned it down.
That tracks. But also, I think Christopher Lloyd is pretty fucking incredible as Uncle Fester.
According to IMDb, his four films that he's known for are Back to the Future, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, The Addams Family, and Addams Family Values.
Right, so they beat Back to the Future 2 and 3. Interesting. So we've also got a young pre-fame Christina Ricci as Wednesday Adams. You've got some kid,
some guy,
as Pugsley.
Yeah.
As Pugsley. And who am I missing? Anyone I'm missing? Anyone big I'm missing?
Yeah, let me have a look. I mean, potentially the biggest of them all, you've got Lurch, just in terms of height.
And he's played by the giant from Twin Peaks, him from.
Carol Strucken.
And he's in the first... He's in all three live-action ones as well.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the only actor to appear in all three.
No, the other one... someone else also does. I think... Oh, the guy that does the hand thing.
You've also got Thing, who is a hand. And the grandma is just a very forgettable character that very rarely contributes anything.
Judith Malina plays her.
To the plot. And what a plot this is, Richard. I felt this was a very strange plot for the first live-action Addams Family movie.
It's very Bad Boys.
Yeah, right. This feels like this is the second Addams Family movie, and there's a first one that's just a basic execution
idea. What you're describing there is that, like, this is a sequel to the TV show.
There you go. That's exactly what I'm saying.
That it's like, this is, you are expected to come to Addams Family 1991 with a certain level of knowledge of what the Addams Family is.
Mm. Yeah. So it begins, the basic plot of it is that Uncle Fester has been missing for 25 years, which means that, like, the kids haven't even met him in this version of the plot, right? And there's this greedy, their lawyer is like greedy money grubbing dude who meets there's this old lady who wants to like take their fortune.
Yeah.
And she's in cahoots with the lawyer. And then the lawyer meets her large adult son who looks a lot like Fester and is played by Christopher Lloyd, and convinces this guy to pretend to be Fester and show up at the Addams Family and be like, I'm back, so that he can steal the fortune. And it's real like, huh. Like, I watched this in two parts. Yeah. I watched the first hour and then watched the last half hour the next day. And the first hour, I was like, so does Christopher Lloyd not play Fester in the Addams Family movie? Does he just play a guy who looks like Fester? And there's this whole story where they end up getting kicked out of their house in the last like act of the film. And we get a brief, you know, what are the Addams Family like outside of the house? And when that was going on, part of me was like, should this not have been the film? Like, this whole joke, should this not have been the first film? And they get it back where it's, and then it is revealed that the imitation Fester actually is Fester, which I was like, this feels like a studio note. This feels like, no, we need Fester in there.
Interesting. And yeah, you should say that. There was a 2012 interview with Sonnenfeld who said that he originally wanted it to be unclear whether it was an imposter or not, but the actors all strongly opposed to the notion and then selected then 10-year-old Christina Ricci to come to the director on their behalf as like a spokesperson for the cast and say, no, that it really, he shouldn't be an imposter. And they changed it to make the actors happy and said, yeah, they were right, it was the better way to go.
I don't know. Here's what I think is the better way to go, Barry. I think, don't do this plot for the first Addams Family movie. Right. I think it's very strange. I think I would have preferred to just immediately meet the full family and then see them go on an adventure, because that is he or isn't he Fester kind of just hangs over the whole film and not in a fun way. It just felt confusing and like a weird rendition of it. But it's very funny. It's a very funny film. I was laughing my ass off. It's very sexy, very funny. Yeah, what did you think of it?
I thought it was very funny and very sexy.
You're kidding.
Whoa. No, yeah, it's like, it's so much fun. And like, there is that, we sort of joked about it, but it's like, there is this Sonnenfeld touch that it's like this real sort of like workman director who, you know, isn't by any means a household name, and you know, since Big Trouble hasn't really made anything good. That's including Big Trouble being very bad.
I'm confused. What?
but yeah, just that like 90s Sonnenfeld had such a style, and I think that like balance of comedy and like in Men in Black, it's action or like sort of heightened reality, I guess, that it's like, it's sci-fi in Men in Black, and then it's like the macabre or goth in Addams Family, that like the blending of humor in that is like, that's the Sonnenfeld touch. And then I guess he couldn't do it for westerns in Wild Wild West.
It feels like, a lot of people say he's like aping the at the time newly established Tim Burton style.
Yeah. Who was the first choice for the film as well, obviously, but was busy with Batman.
That makes a lot of sense, but I actually think it's better not being full Burton. If this was full Burton, you'd have, everything would be fucking curly spirals, like, you know, it'd be a Tim Burton film and not an Addams Family film.
Mm. Well, I mean, this, we do know like what Tim Burton Addams Family looks like, because we have gotten it.
But this feels like it's more like what I understand of the cartoon brought to life, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. No, it's a good fun film. What do you think it has on Rotten Tomatoes? Do you think critics agreed with us?
I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of, like, similar to what I said, of just sort of like, there's a but it gets muddied with its weird plot. So I'm going to guess, like, maybe low fresh, maybe, like, just 70?
67, so yeah, reasonably close there. Yeah, yeah, well, let's see what critics... I mean, it made back its money and made 7 times its production cost, and so got a sequel, which we'll talk about in just a moment. But, yeah, we're looking for the line where it's like, critics, you know, were divided on this, and, yeah.
The consensus?
Well, yeah, a lot of people were just like... Yeah, it has a bunch of jokes. It doesn't. The script's kind of just disjointed. I think it's almost like, for just from reading like little bits and pieces of reviews, it's almost like people didn't like the comedy.
The best part of the film.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting, interesting.
So, yeah, as I mentioned, Rachel, our unpaid intern, has sent through a bunch of things lifted from the comics. I'm going to read a couple of them for each film. But the, yeah, just to some that you might be quite interested, I think, and Rachel, I think, and their research found it very surprising that it's like, oh, there's a lot of stuff that's actually kind of faithful to the comics. So there's Gomez and Morticia's Unhappy Darling, completely. That exchange is taken from one of the comics, and that's across like all of the films. They say a version of that in every film. There's when Fester's unpacking, Morticia takes out his bottle of cyanide and says cyanide as if we'd run out. And one of the comics is Morticia going to a neighbor's house to ask to borrow a cup of cyanide. Interestingly enough, the neighbor's design is the same design that would later be used for Grandmama. So arguably, she is asking Grandmama, who's just living in a separate house. Although it's clear that Adams probably just came up with the design first and then decided to, you know, like it and use it later.
Do you know what's another example of that happening?
What?
I think about this all the time, actually. Do you ever read, did you ever read Asterix comics?
No.
Not at all. So
no, I was too busy getting laid.
Yeah, when I was reading them at 6 years old. So you wouldn't recognize any character names?
I know Asterix and Obelix.
Do you know? So Obelix has a little dog that follows him everywhere called Dogmatix, right? Yeah. Which, as an adult, understanding the jokes in Asterix character names is so funny. But there is a specific Asterix comic where whoever wrote Asterix just drew a dog and was like, I love this dog so much. And they retroactively went back through the like 15 earlier comics and inserted Dogmatix into them because he just loved the design so much. But the time you see him appear in the 15th episode of Asterix is like, he doesn't appear until that first appearance. And then he just keeps following them around, and they just really liked the design so much that they put him in.
This older, I love the episodes. Idea of like falling in love with a little doodle you made so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you really want to say about the first film?
Again, I just want to draw attention back to the incredible cast. Yeah, because, I mean, like,
one of the best comedy ensembles I think I've ever seen in terms of like almost everyone pulling their weight except Pugsley. Establishing the formula of Pugsley just being some guy.
Yeah. So, like, Christopher Lloyd as Fester, he is like pushing, he is like closing his throat for. It's a disgusting performance.
It's an insane performance.
It's like, look, that's the energy in which he attempts every line of dialogue.
It's like he's trying to, like, like if you're embarrassed and you're like comically embarrassed, you like sink your head and you like get rid of your neck and sink your head into your shoulders. He's doing that with every line, but like, it's this thing, like, we talked on the Men in Black episode, actually, about how, like, Vincent D'Onofrio did that, like, incredible body performance of Edgar the Bug. But, like, that was, you know, they were actually, like, pulling on parts of it, and, like, and it's seamless, it looks like that. But, like, Christopher Lloyd in this film, and I'm not saying this to the film's detriment because it's so funny, but it's like, you can see him doing that. You can see him hunching. It doesn't look like the character just looks like that, but he's got this like this fat suit on, and it's fucking hilarious. It's a crazy performance.
It's a great performance. And Raul Julia, who I'm not familiar with outside of these films, he's dead now, right?
He passed away a couple months after the second one came out.
Wow.
Like a few months, yeah.
What did he die from?
I'm not sure exactly what his illness was, but he was like, he was declining health in the second one, and then he's got like a famous posthumous performance in Mortal Kombat, which came out afterwards, and that's the one that's like, the film's terrible, but apparently he's incredible in it.
Right.
And so, yeah, his death. He, stomach cancer.
Wow. That sucks. I think what's compelling to me about Gomez Adams is I think I'd falsely assumed him and Morticia were both these very sexy, like, demon nightmare characters. But that's definitely Morticia. Gomez is like this ugly little dude with the confidence of the sexiest man alive. And I think, and that tends to be what it is in almost every rendition I've seen of the character. And I just thought he was so great. It's so, such a weird character. And once again, Morticia Adams, Angelica Houston. This movie had me looking up what Angelica Houston's most iconic performances were, because I was like, I gotta get more Angelica. No, Richard! Just on Wikipedia. Like, she's been nominated for some Academy Awards and stuff. For movies I'd never heard of. So I was like, maybe I should go on an Angelica Houston binge.
Just a bit more about Raul Julia as well. So on November 21st, 1994, so, you know, only, you know, 29 years ago from a few days ago when we're recording this, Rudy Giuliani declared that to be Raul Julia Day. So we're recording this not long after Raul Julia Day.
Okay. Interesting.
He also... Yeah, he was in his hospital bed because he got like food poisoning, and then that really accelerated the severity of his condition. But in his hospital bed just before he passed away, he was reviewing the script for Desperado, which he was going to be in.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah, well, let's discuss probably the more definitive performance of Raul Julia as Gomez Adams, shall we?
Alrighty. So, yeah, 2 years later, again directed by Barry Sonnenfeld, we had Adams Family Values. And up top, we talk about titles a lot on this podcast, which is seeing what we usually say for the end.
So excited.
This has got to be one of the best sequel titles ever, right?
I'm of two minds.
Well, Richard. Because it drops the...
Because it drops the, but then the straight to DVD movie that's arguably not even in the same canon continues the trend, and it kind of retroactively saves dropping the. I'll say this about dropping the. So the if you don't know what I'm talking about, the second Addams Family movie is not called The Addams Family Values. It's called Addams Family Values, and Addams Family Reunion is the third one. And I remember when Incredibles 2 came out, and there was this clip of someone, Brad Bird or someone, being like, yeah, we dropped the from Incredibles to make Incredibles 2 title, because doesn't the Incredibles 2 sound ridiculous or some very ill-defined reason? And I saw a tweet sometime later that really spoke my views into the world on this, which is that... With The Incredibles specifically, and I think it does apply to The Addams Family as well, with The Incredibles specifically, if you don't have the there, it removes the joke from the original title, because the original title is The Incredibles, like as if you were to say The Joneses or The Martins. Like, it is making fun of the fact that you would refer to a family with the surname Incredible. It's a very subtle joke, but it is needed, I think. I don't think the first one would have as good of a title if it was just called Incredibles, because it's not playing into the trope of what we call our, you know, other families. Yeah. And similarly here, I wonder, is there any information at all on dropping the from Addams Family Values? Because it is a similar thing where it's like, they are the Addams Family. It is the whole thing is like, you think your family's weird? Check out the Addams Family, you know? And I feel like you're removing the familiar language from how these characters are discussed by removing the there. What do you think?
I don't mind removing the. I think it does just tidy up the sequel poster, but the title, it's a joke, or like a tongue-in-cheek reference there. So after the 1992 LA riots in the wake of the beating of Rodney King, the then Vice President Dan Quayle blamed, like, this controversial famous speech, he blamed the riots on a breakdown of family values. And so then a year later, Adam's Family Values came out, which is like taking the piss out of the Vice President.
Yeah, it's the second film franchise four nights in a row we've discussed the beating of Rodney King also. Because there was on Barbershop as well. They talked about it, didn't they? Yeah, interesting. And I first of all, let me say this. I love the format of, and I've talked about this before, my favorite sequel title trope is continuing a sentence based off the first film. So look who's talking to, look who's talking now is great. The Addams Family, Addams Family Values, Addams Family Reunion. Keep going, I say.
Addams Family Vacation.
Yeah. That's a film which is a which movie
I thought existed.
I did too. When do we talk about that? Do we want to talk
about
I think I thought the third one was called Addams Family Vacation.
Yeah. I think I probably thought the same thing. But then, yeah, like, I remember maybe even when making the film franchise Fortnite's list originally was when I discovered that it's, like, no values in Reunion and there's no Vacation, and I was surprised to learn it then. But it's, like, it just makes sense. And then the 20...
Don't start with V.
The 2021 film, Addams Family 2, is about them going on a vacation, and, like, the poster is very much them in, like, vacation gear. And so part of me was, like, am I retroactively just thinking that that's what that one was called?
Well,
or, like,
also
trying to...
Gomez in the Addams Family 2 shouts, "We're going on an Addams Family vacation."
It's very...
So it's even in the dialogue.
Muppets Again, where it's like they say what the title of the film should be, and then it's like cuts to a different title.
Yeah,
it feels like they wanted to call it Addams Family Vacation.
I think they absolutely did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cool. So Addams Family Values, I think, is the better of the two films.
Yeah, that's almost everyone agrees with you.
Yeah, what are we talking on Rotten Tomatoes? So 67 for the first one. I reckon we're looking maybe low 90s for this one.
75, but it is generally considered like an improvement.
I just think, again, that the plot's not as weird. It doesn't feel like I've walked into the cinema late, which is kind of what the first one feels like at times.
Like 20 years too late.
20 years too late.
I also, like, I think a lot of the more sort of like iconic iconography comes from this one. Like the Wednesday Addams dressed as a Native American is like a very... I've seen that picture a thousand times.
Yeah, yeah. So this one is about the Morticia and Gomez decide they need a nanny for the kids because they have a new baby.
Pubert.
Pubert.
Which was, I think, the original name of Pugsley in the comics, or wanted to be, but someone said, no, you can't call it that.
Pubert. Incredible. Like, baffling joke almost. And Pugsley and Wednesday regularly are trying to murder Pubert, which brings me to the first thing I want to talk about with this film, which it feels like this is like, we made the first one, it made money, now the studio are going to let me do whatever I want with the second one. And so they kind of like... In the first one, it's things like they like the macabre, so they'll have at the end, they're like, you know, what a horrible, horrible day, and they're like, yes, and they love that it's horrible. In the second one, they are straight evil, which I thought was a funny new spin. Like, there's a bit where one character meets Gomez and they're like, ah, Gomez Addams, I heard you're quite the lady killer. And he's like, none of the charges stuck. And it's like, oh, so Gomez is a murderer of women in this film. You know, like, there are several scenes where Wednesday and Pugsley are actively trying to murder their baby brother, and they're only stopped because someone saves the baby.
Well, it's just like, coincidences most of the
time.
It's
coincidence that saves them. And so they get a nanny. And the nanny they bring in is played by Joan Cusack in, ladies and gentlemen, a very different role from her School of Rock character.
Had
which
me
is who
looking
I...
up Joan Cusack performances, if you know what I mean.
A very sort of femme fatale, but exaggerated, very sexy, very like, yeah, very booby. It's a very booby performance from Joan Cusack. And she, they bring her on as the nanny, and she is sort of courting Fester. And Fester thinks it's because she's in love with him. We, the audience, find out she's actually like a black widow who regularly, you know, marries men for their fortune, then kills them. And there's this whole running gag in it that I thought was brilliant, that Fester's dead already?
He can't be killed. Yeah.
He can't be killed. So she drops a toaster in his bath. She blows up a house with him in it. And like cartoon logic applies to him, but not to anything else. It's really funny. It's really funny. And it's so campy and great. But part of her plan, because the Pugsley and Wednesday are kind of catching on to her, so she convinces Gomez and Morticia to send them away to summer camp, which is where the majority of that storyline takes place, where Wednesday starts a romance with a very young and very nerdy David Krumholtz.
I actually didn't realize it was him.
It's one of these things where it's like, was David Krumholtz this young in 1993? Yeah. Because it's like, when was he's in the Santa Claus, which came out, 2 years after this? And he just looks like an adult at that.
Yeah.
there's like corrupt camp counselors that want her to behave a certain way and a popular girl who she hates. And she ends up, one of these scenes that now does the rounds on Twitter because it's this absurdly woke take for 1993, where she agrees to be in their Thanksgiving play, which is about the like pilgrims and Native Americans, which paints it as if it was a amicable and, you know, very loving exchange of resource and land and food, where Wednesday just like goes off script and starts talking about how they took their land from the Native Americans and embarrasses all the bad characters in the process.
Yeah.
What happens to Joan Cusack at the end of this? How does it all wrap up? Richard, tell me.
At the end of the film, she tries to electrocute the family in these like electric chairs. And then it's Pubert that saves the day, connecting the loose wires, which fucking explodes her.
Oh, and she dies, eh? She just
dies. She burns to ashes, leaving only her shoes and credit cards behind.
So, great stuff. Really liked this movie. Yeah, thought this is really easily the more definitive of the two live action ones. And we haven't talked about her much, but like Christina Ricci as Wednesday
is so good.
So fucking good. I can't remember which film it is in, but there's one bit where she's like the running gag, which I'm sure exists through all Adams Family media, is that she's like regularly putting Pugsley in like deadly situations. And there's one where she ties him up to like an electric chair and he's like, what are we playing? And she's like, it's a new game called Is There a God? Which I was like, holy shit. It's so much funnier than just like, you know, electric chair or like, you know, like it's a lot more deep, which is such a great kind of rule for the character. And this is also like what I imagine writing Wednesday Adams, where it gets the most interesting, is when you have these things where she's like going undercover and pretends to be like normal for to trick people, which I think, I don't know, that must be pretty fun to write such a established macabre character doing interesting things with that characterization.
Yeah, it is funny with Wednesday Adams. I also haven't seen the show, but it's the kind of thing that it's like one of those things I've seen a lot of people emulate, but it's like Christina Ricci is so fucking good in the role and like an incredible child performance as well. And yeah, again, just sort of relating to that thing you're saying about it's like genuinely might be one of the best ensemble cast, like one of those things where like in any other movie every single one of these characters would be the best character.
Totally, it's incredible, except for Pugsley, who
except for Pugsley is just some guy.
What he even looks like.
But on Christina Ricci, during the press for this film, she got asked by she said this was the worst question she's ever been asked in an interview. A woman asked her if she'd gone through puberty yet and if she'd gotten a period at 13 years old. And she replied, no, I'm going through menopause, which is a great Wednesday Addams answer. But yeah, she said that, it's like, that was disgusting thing to be asked.
Yeah, far out. There's a real funny bit where when Joan Cusack's trying to seduce Fester and she's like, Fester, I'm a virgin. And he like doesn't really understand what that means. Mm. And then when she explains it to him, he's like, oh, me too. it's so funny. I love that. So the first film, we didn't really go into this much, but the first film opens with like carolers or people singing, and it pans up to the Addams Family like pouring boiling oil on them or something from above, and when it pans up, you hear dun-dun-dun-dun. And then that's the only time that plays, listeners, for two movies. It doesn't play in the second one at all. There is an orchestral da-da-da-da that plays as part of the score. But the clicks are what I'm here for, baby. The clicks are like that's the best gabagool. Part. That's the gabagool, Richard. The gabagool. And I was just so shocked because nowadays, if this was made now, and it more or less has been made now in animated form and the TV show, the way that these adaptations of like legacy properties work is like if the original property has an iconic theme, you are getting fucking Dua Lipa to do a new version of it for you. You are using that as a powerful tool for nostalgia. You are using that to build excitement. You think about how the Spider-Man theme is used in the MCU Spider-Man movies and things like these are such. That's how we do that now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like we weaponize nostalgia.
We weaponize nostalgia, and it's so weird to see a couple of movies flagrantly ignore that and defiantly ignore that. And even though
these are from the time that we're nostalgic for, like
exactly. Yeah. But it's like I kind of wish these movies had the theme in it more, I guess.
Right, so once again, we're going to turn to our unpaid intern, Rachel. A few more things lifted from the comics in Addams Family Values. So Morticia's line to Debbie on her first night, scream if you need anything, is taken from a comic where Morticia is showing a man his room and says, if you should need anything, just scream.
Nice.
Morticia's parting instructions for babysitters in the film are all the important numbers, police, fire department, morgue. and in the comic, the instructions for babysitters, get the children to bed around 8 and keep your back to the wall at all times.
I'm starting to get an understanding for how these were Far Side-esque single panel comics.
Yeah. The last one that Rachel's pointed out has said, Wednesday and Pugsley did attend camp in one of the comics. The comic itself has them being returned home in cages. You would know this if you read all the bullet points for the previous movie, but I won't hold it against you if you don't.
Nice.
Anything else you want to say about the Addams Family? Addams Family Values.
I mean, only that I wish there was a third movie that was of the same caliber.
So there was plans to have one, obviously, but Raul Julia passed away, and when Addams Family Reunion rolled around, I'll get to how that came to be in just a second, but when it came to, you know, into production, the Christina Ricci and whoever played Pugsley had aged out of the roles by then, and all the adult cast were offered to come back, but out of respect for Raul, said no. So that's why none of them returned.
Except for Lurch
and the guy doing the hand. So there was an interesting quirk of like rights in the 90s that different studios could own the theatrical rights and the direct-to-video rights of a property. And so Saban, who make Power Rangers, bought the direct-to-video rights for Addams Family and was sort of like planning to, and there's like a few different iterations of like what they were planning and stuff, but eventually it came to be that they wanted to make one that's like just firmly marketed towards children without the sort of edgier stuff in the original. And so they wanted it to kind of be more, I guess, of the TV series. But it's like interesting thing there. So at one point it was like you could have had both and just be completely different, but somehow they were able to give it the same titling scheme and it be live action and stuff. But yeah, that's why this one exists. And recasting, I guess, like,
yeah, there's recasting, but there's also a bit of a plot reset because Pubert is nary even mentioned.
Wednesday and Pugsley finally got to him.
Yeah, exactly. And so it, for all those canon nerds out there like me, you're forced to reconcile with, like, well, they got Lurch back. So it's definitively the same actor from a previous canon.
Mm.
But it's blatantly ignoring, like, a status quo change as well. Mm. So is it, and the titling scheme looks consistent. So is it, and what do you think? Do you think this is the third part of the trilogy, or is this a reboot?
I think it's a soft reboot.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. There was another TV show after this, The New Addams Family, which the girl who plays Wednesday in this went on to star in.
Yeah, which is like, cool, good on her. Good on her for...
Well, is that forcing you, AJ, then, to have The New Addams Family be a continuation of the 1991 film? Because you have Lurch carry over from Values to Reunion, and then he passes the torch to Wednesday, who then carries on to New Addams Family.
My mind is about to explode. Because I don't know what to say.
So this film doesn't have a Rotten Tomatoes score. I can tell you it does have a 33% audience score.
Oof.
And yeah, it was directed by a guy called Dave Payne. And the only release this film has ever had is its original VHS in 1998. They've never re-released it or anything.
Yeah, because you look for a very hard movie to pirate. This one,
it's on YouTube,
it's actually
a very easy movie to watch.
Well, yeah, but not, you know, not you can't find a high quality an HD version of it
because it doesn't exist,
which isn't that miserable. It's lost media. The original film prints of Adam's family reunion. Yeah,
so it's worth pointing out though that the recasting sort of.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Most notably, you have Daryl Hannah playing Morticia and Tim Curry as Gomez, which is like, I find super interesting casting because it's like, you know, you go to a direct-to-video series and you get some fucking no one's ever heard of to play the person. But it's like Daryl Hannah and Tim Curry are arguably like just as good casting as Angelica Houston and Raul Julia. Like, for the time.
I can say that for Gomez. I don't know if I agree with Angelica Houston and Daryl Hannah. Sure. One thing I didn't mention on as it specifically happens every time there's a shot of Morticia in Adam's Family Values, where the way they've lit it is so that it's like, what am I explaining? It's like a chiaroscuro lighting.
There's like just a beam of light illuminating her eyes.
It's very subtly though, so it looks like she's like peering out a window almost, but she'll be like standing next to Gomez and he doesn't have this lighting set up and she does, and there's one part where it happens while she's like moving and they attempt
it's a reference to Whatever Happened to Baby Joe, like one of those kind of movies.
And they attempted a couple of times with Daryl Hannah, and it just made me livid, Richard. It was like a how dare you stand where she stood moment. But Tim Curry is so obvious as the casting for Gomez that I'd never properly seen the first two movies. I have the most pitifully vague memory of seeing this one before.
I'm the same,
And for years, I assumed Tim Curry played Gomez in the first two as well. Because does it not just make complete sense that Tim Curry has played Gomez?
Tim Curry as Gomez is like a perfect marriage of actor and character.
Yeah, and it's funny because...
he's not that great in the film, I didn't think.
No,
like,
no, I'll say that as like, as good of an idea it is to cast him, he doesn't really do anything outside
well,
of...
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I wouldn't say he's phoning it in because I don't think Tim Curry ever did that. But like, yeah, it's just... Like, I think
what,
they did
four Barbie movies and two Scooby Doo movies will attest to that.
Yeah, like, I think, and this is like a behind the scenes quote that I found as well, that it's like they were deliberately moving away from the what they call Latin Lothario that was Raul Julia and taking a more like taking just kind of this X factor out of that Raul and Sonnenfeld, I guess, added that wasn't there originally.
Mm. Yeah, and because Tim Curry's got to be the best actor who's been in the most straight-to-DVD garbage films.
Clint Howard as well.
Clint Howard's another one, another Clint Howard film to add to the collection. But what I thought was interesting is that, so canonically the Adams are, what, Spanish, I guess? Is that true?
Yeah. I think it's varied from time to time, but like, I know the in Wednesday in the show, the cast was sort of made Latin around Jenna Ortega, and because they were like, oh, they wanted to honor the character's roots, but I'm not sure when that became official.
Right, because Raul Julia is I don't know where he's specifically from,
Puerto
but
Rican, maybe?
But he's doing like the. He's doing the, like, Gomez Adams accent. I don't know how else to describe it, right? Which, is that just what Raul Julia... It's just because...
I think it might be,
In the animated ones, where Gomez is staggeringly voiced by a very enthusiastic Oscar Isaac, of all people, he's also doing the, like... he's doing a Latin accent.
Well, I think that's because it's...
accent.
That's his... He's, what, Guatemalan?
Right,
and,
but...
yeah.
He's still putting on
Oscar Isaac's accent. Well, I think
he's still put no. Oscar Isaac doesn't sound like that.
I think it's one of those things that like that's probably the accent that Oscar Isaac talks to his family in. It's like something that he can very easily settle into, and it's like it would be incorrect to say it's not his accent, you know. But also, like, yeah, like you said, he speaks with, like, a more American accent normally. But I think it's... It's not like... I don't think he's, like, putting on an accent. I think he's allowing his natural accent to come through a bit more, I would say.
Right. I remember when Catherine Zeta-Jones and... Who plays Gomez in Wednesday? It's...
He's in the episode of Community where it's, would they make the statue to him? Because he used to go to the... because he used to go to Greendale.
Luis Guzman.
Yeah, Luis Guzman.
Guzman. Like, I remember when he was cast and there was, like, big uproar, like, why'd they cast this dude as the, you know, sexy Gomez Adams? Mm. And I remember reading, like, no, like, the Adams family are supposed to have, like, a heritage that's based in, like, Latinx kind of stuff. This is all to say that Tim Curry, who is white bread white, there is one scene in this where all of a sudden he's doing like sort of like a trepidatious attempt at like a Spanish accent. Did you pick up on this?
No, I didn't.
It's when, so the plot of this film is they accidentally get invited to an Adams family reunion that is single D, A-D-A-M-S reunion, and they think they just put a typo in the invitation. And when he meets the other Adams, one of whom is played by Ed Begley Jr. from Arrested Development and Better Call Saul, who's sort of one of the main villains
Saint
of the film.
Elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah. He starts talking in that accent, and it must have been, I reckon this, if he's ever seen it, I reckon this must be frustrating for Tim Curry to be like, no, we made this was the first scene we shot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then afterwards we made the decision that I can't do this accent the whole time. And then they didn't use the version where I'm not doing the accent for that one scene. It feels like that anyway.
What did you think of the film?
Oh, awful. Awful film. It's awful, and it's like...
It's creepy,
it's boring,
and it's kooky.
It's all a little too ooky for my tastes, Richard. No, I don't know. I like I said, I'd seen this before, and there was a bit where whatever actor they got to play fucking Fester in this film, which is a very different energy to Christopher Lloyd, his storyline is that he's got like this monster pet that keeps eating people's hair. Mm. And there's a bit where he's like talking to him. He's like, I can't feed him. I don't have any hair. And all of a sudden I had one of those moments where you time travel back to when you're 10 years old. And I was like, I remember that joke. I've seen this movie.
Oh yeah.
So there was that. There's also another like sort of sea story where Lurch saves a woman from drowning in the pool and gives her mouth to mouth and then just stalks her for the rest of the movie. And I, again,
funny stuff.
I'd falsely remembered that as being what I think would have also been more appropriate, is that like they both fall in love. Does that not feel more like the trope that someone falls in love? No, but like maybe she's a little ooky as well. That's true. But maybe she's a little ooky as well, and it's this like little love story for Lurch, but it's not. He's just actively stalking a woman who is terrified of him. So that was kind of uncomfortable. I don't even remember what happens in the rest of this movie. I remember that Ed Begley Jr.'s trying to kill his dad, and then...
Yeah, he wants the fortune.
But then the dad takes a shining to the actual Adams family because of how like honest they are and unafraid of being weird and ooky.
Yeah.
And so they get the money or something like that. I can't remember. Mm. Sorry, everyone.
I had the same thing as you with like flashing back. But for me, it was when Pugsley has like this spread of insects and creepy crawlies. And he goes, hey, where's my banana slug? And then Lurch like... Burr. And yeah, I had the exact same thing where I was like, oh my God, have I seen this movie? What the fuck? Or is this just like that joke? Was it because it's like specifically a banana slug, like all of this, yeah, somewhere in the recent, but like I know what a banana slug is. I've heard of it because of it used in that thing. Because you were like, oh, that's just a common trope. And I was like, no, AJ.
It's the banana slug specifically. I'll say this for Adam's Family Reunion. It's not a bad premise. Like they get accidentally invited.
No, yeah, that's the thing. I thought that as well, that it's like, I wouldn't be surprised if this was genuinely the plot for the third one.
The Barry Sonnenfeld, yeah. Raul Julia third one. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Because it puts them in a bright, colourful environment, which is where most of the comedy can be mined from. So, yeah.
So even though this one is a bit of a departure from the last two, there are still some stuff lifted from the comics, as mentioned. Rich has only given me a couple for this one. So there is a comic where Grandmama plays cards and is called out by Morticia for not cheating. So as shown in the film, her grandma is officially a fan of honest card games. And feeling gloomy terribly is again similar to the unhappy completely exchange from the comics and the 1991 film. Just shittier.
Yeah, it is just shitty.
So the series went a little bit dormant for a while. In 2010, Illumination Entertainment acquired the rights to the Addams Family comics and began work on a stop-motion animated film to be directed by Tim Burton and produced by Chris Meledandri.
Sounds great. Big fan of Chris Meledandri, did you say? Big fan. Yeah, okay. No, it does feel like a production hell kind of situation. But a stop motion. Oh, young Crash has just popped up to the mic.
You want to talk? Can we say hi?
Meow. Whoa! He's like, the government did 9/11.
Keep the spooky black cat. Mm. I'm holding my cat, if that wasn't clear. There's a black cat.
Dude, Crash. This has never happened on Film Franchise Fortnights before.
What?
I cannot be bothered talking about these next two movies. they are so just like... So Adam's Family Reunion, the worst one.
Yeah.
But it's like bad enough that there's like stuff to discuss.
Yeah, it looks like these shit. It was made for a budget of, what, $3.80? $3.80.
These animated films from, what, 2019 and...
2021.
They are just like... They're like... Every, you know, they're what I refer to as holiday program movies, which is when you've been roped into running a holiday program for children and you're lucky enough to get rostered on for the movie day, you go see this movie. you know.
Yeah, yeah, you get the cool parent who allows you to watch like a non-Christian film.
Yeah. And it's just like, this is, they're both pretty similar and they're both kind of like, so it's things like you've got the classic Addams Family dynamics and things in there, but then like someone will make a reference to Billie Eilish and you just go like,
I hate the reference. And also that like it's 2 years old and that reference is dated, because the joke is that Gomez says, tell that Billie Eilish her like music is a bit too cheery for my taste. 2021, Billie Eilish known for being very macabre, but she's like changed her whole thing, like Happier Than Ever was her last album.
Have you listened to it though? I wouldn't describe it.
Yes, still, but it's like, I think her image has changed. Like, I mean, I guess like that Barbie song that I can't escape on TikTok. But the, yeah, it's a disappointing film. Let's talk about the casting of the film. So first of all, because you have, it's very like, it's a very star-studded cast. Okay, sorry, Crash, I need to put you down. Not like that. I need to put him on the floor. I would never do that. So, yeah, it stars, as you mentioned earlier, Oscar Isaac as Gomez Addams, Charlize Theron as Morticia Addams, Chloe Grace Moretz as Wednesday, Finn Wolfhard as Pugsley, who was recast for the second one because his voice broke.
Well, it broke before the first one. I don't know why they cast... Well, I do know why, sorry.
Yeah, well,
I know why they cast Finn Wolfhard in the first one.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have. He sounds like a 20-year-old like man. Yeah.
So you have Nick Kroll as Uncle Fester, who's doing, like... If you've seen Big Mouth, he's just doing Coach Steve. Snoop Dogg plays It in what's like supposed supposed to be like the Patrick Stewart playing the poop emoji. That's like, isn't it funny we got this guy for this role? Bette Midler plays Grandmama. Alison Janney as the villain of the film, Margot Needler. You also have Martin Short and Catherine O'Hara as the frumps, Morticia's parents.
Mm-hmm.
Elsie Fisher's in the film. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Casting, so this is the thing that it's like when the film's cast was announced, I was like, and other people online share this sentiment, but it's like infuriating that you would have, I'll say it, the best possible 2019 casting of Gomez and Morticia and waste it on an animated film.
Well, we talked about this recently, but it has echoes of casting Benedict Cumberbatch as Grinch and then having him do an American accent, where Benedict Cumberbatch would make an amazing live action Grinch anyway, you know, like let alone the fact that they took away the whole point of casting him as that character.
Yeah, but like I think of Oscar Isaac as a live action Gomez and my penis swells up.
Interesting. Wow.
Not with arousal.
For those wondering at home, Richard did make sure his cat had left the room before he said such inappropriate
things. now the kids are away. But yeah, so like Oscar Isaac and Charlize Theron, neither of them do anything particularly interesting with their vocal performances. Like
I think Oscar Isaac is doing, he's very enthusiastic, which I was like, he's you know, cashing his check well deserved.
But what,
not something you can say for every voice actor.
Well, but I would say the thing about this film, though, is that this is one of the classic, like, actors aren't necessarily voice acting, like voice actors, that, like, you can't just get the biggest stars in the world. Like, Finn Wolfhard as Pugsley, especially, is just like, you Googled famous child actor in 2019 and said, okay, cool, we'll get that guy. Chloe Grace Moretz, I also think, is pretty uninspired for Wednesday, that it's just like, let's get a young female actor.
Yeah,
and then, but it's like, she does a decent job. Like, it's like Wednesday is also the character you have the most to do with. Like, Wednesday's the best character in the Addams Family. And that's the reason she got her own spinoff. But yeah, like, Finn Wolfhard as Pugsley is just, I mean, it continues the trend of just that being such a nothing character.
Yeah, that's true. But it's really confusing. Like, who was Pugsley in the original series, I guess, is my question. Because I've just got, he's just a little chubby boy is like 100% of his characterization to me. But even then, it's like they should have got, well, first of all, Finn Wolfhard is for some reason perpetually thought of as who he is in season one of Stranger Things. By season two of Stranger Things, by It Chapter Two, he's too old for the role.
He's being de-aged. Yeah.
And so, like, they should have got, like, I don't know. They should have got a Jacob woman Tremblay. To play. Yeah, whose voice didn't break for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
They should have got, like, a woman to play Pugsley. I think.
Well, actually, interestingly, in, I think, the first animated series they did after the Scooby-Doo one, Pugsley is played by an 11-year-old Jodie Foster.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Wow. That's shocking. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pugsley just being like, he said, I can smell your cunt.
Yeah. So, there is something I want to talk about with the first film of these two, though, which is the cold open of the first film. It starts with Gomez and Morticia's wedding day. It shows them getting married. We are then chased out of town by an angry mob, and they're driving away and they run over someone, which was shocking to see in a kids movie. First of all, I was like, Jesus Christ, they've hit someone. That someone, it turns out to be Lurch, who's just escaped from an insane asylum, and they're just like, oh, take our bags, and he's like, okay, and Thing is already there. And then they move into the iconic Addams Family house, and then Lurch is like trying to figure out the piano, because he can, of course, very funny to see a Frankenstein's monster be so beautiful with the piano. And then him and Thing kind of slowly work out how to play the Addams Family theme song. Like Thing is giving him feedback, like he starts going like da 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 da, and Thing like is miming like slow it down, and then he goes da 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 da, and then Thing goes. And I thought, fucking hype, dude. I thought this was the hype that the live action films were missing.
Well, this is the 2019 approach to nostalgia.
Yeah, but it works with music. I'm okay with it when it's music. It's when it's other things you're pulling
from. It's when it's 80-year-old actors.
Yeah, man, totally. And it's like, I was prepared after the cold open. I was like, I'm going to like this movie. Sorry, everyone.
That's the thing. Yeah, I didn't know this was bad going into it.
Yeah, right. But and the way that iconic theme is used in these animated films is the best thing about the films, which is more a statement on how good that theme is as opposed to how good the films are. And it just it made me yearn for seeing that in those live action ones. Because by the time it gets to the fully realized version, you're like, strap in, motherfuckers, we're gonna watch the Addams fucking Family. It's so fuck yeah, you know, like it's so hype, and then it just immediately drops and the film is about like a reality TV show or a home flipping
home makeover show, yeah,
that are wanting to get rid of the Addams Family house because it is on a big hill in a newly established
hardly
town.
In fitting with the village's rustic aesthetic. It was like again, it's like, I don't hate the premise of the film, that it's like the fam, like the entire town, who's like almost like Stepford Wives-y kind of like normal, everyone's the same, that they want to, you know, assimilate the Addams Family. I was like, it's kind of a good idea. Like,
yeah, again, it's not a bad idea, but I think the character designs in this are kind of shit. I didn't really enjoy.
They're a lot closer to the original comic designs, I will say. So it's like, I think they're hideous. I hate the designs of the characters.
What else is there? There's like, I can't really think of.
there is some stuff obviously that's lifted from the comics, as there always is. This one, they actually to differ from the comics and Anna's Family Reunion, this iteration of Grandma Ma actually openly endorses cheating and is proud of it.
and also has an accent. Again, placing the Addams Family in a culture I'm not entirely sure what that culture is called.
There's also the comic. Apparently, it suggests that Pugsley is the Addams child with interest in, like, normal things, whereas in this, it's Wednesday, which is, like, sort of one of the large plots of the film, is that she wants to attend public school. And much to the chagrin of her parents. Again, an idea I thought was very fun. And it's like, I don't know that I would have bought it if this was, say, the plot of the third film with Christina Ricci, but because it was a new version of Wednesday, I could believe it, but it's like, I just wouldn't believe that that version of Wednesday would lead to wearing a pink dress.
This is also, this first animated one, is the second Addams Family reunion in a row, because that's a big part of the plot as well, is that the family is coming to town.
Yeah.
Including Cousin It, voiced by Snoop Dogg, where they've just raised his pitch and turned it backwards so you can't understand it.
Rachel pointed out as well that this one contains the unhappy darling completely as well.
Nice. Yeah. Who directed this one?
This was Conrad Vernon and I can't remember the other guy's name. Greg Tiernan.
Right. And what was it on Roddy T's?
What do you think?
34?
45.
Hmm. Yeah, it's pretty abysmal. It's not very fun.
Like, your review on Letterboxd, I think, nailed it. That it's like, there's no reason this film had to be bad.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I enjoy the concept broadly. That's such a me thing to say, right? Like, I enjoyed the concept broadly, but the specific iterations, none of them are really hitting home for me, except maybe family values. Yeah, interesting.
But yeah, it was, regardless of what people thought of it, it was followed 2 years later in 2021, went straight to streaming or did like day and date theatrical because of the Delta variant. Remember Delta?
Delta, I remember it well.
So, yeah, what's Addams Family 2 about?
Addams Family 2 is about maybe Wednesday was switched at birth. A ridiculous thing to suggest when you've designed the character to look like a smaller version of her own mother.
Yeah.
And to get away from the, like, DNA man that's following them around, they decide to go on an Addams Family vacation across America where they're stalked by this dude that's trying to prove that Wednesday is not a real Addams, only to find out that it is actually a situation where there's like this tech, an Elon Musk type who is so enthralled by Wednesday's brilliance because she's invented this thing that can supplant another animal's DNA in another animal. Yeah. So she puts squid DNA into Fester, who begins to turn into a squid throughout the film. And he basically wants to claim this for himself. Ends up being the bad guys, voiced by Bill Hader.
Who, interestingly, did you notice was the first male primary antagonist in the franchise?
Wow. Mm. Interesting. Do you reckon there's like oblique references to Breaking Bad with that character? Did you pick up on this?
I have since forgotten them, but I do remember thinking that.
So there is a banner at the science fair, and the at the end of science is the symbol.
Cesium
for,
or something?
Yeah, the elemental table symbol. And then when that character pops up in hologram form, it is like his character design is reminiscent of like early seasons Walter White, I thought. I just thought that there was like a Breaking Bad inspiration thing going on.
Yeah, which you'd be like, no way. But then, like, Wednesday quotes Watchmen in the first film when she goes to public school and she says, "You don't understand. You're not locked up." I'm not locked up in here with you. You're locked in here with me. And then when she in science class, when she resurrects all the frogs, she does the end of this film with Donald Sutherland, Don't Look Now.
Don't Look Now.
Yeah. Or Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Yeah.
No, it's Don't Look Now.
I
didn't know that was the end of Don't Look Now. I've never seen it properly. That's more like there's a subplot where Fester's trying to teach Pugsley how to be good with women, which felt very risky for a 2021.
It is Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, is it really? Yeah. Oh, okay. What do I know?
Because you find out that he's been invaded by the Body Snatchers.
I would have watched all of Don't Look Now waiting for that moment.
Waiting for him to go.
And there's a bit in this movie. Wallace Shawn plays the guy chasing them who ends up being working for Bill Hader's character.
Yeah.
He's the guy who's claiming that Wednesday is not an Addams. And Wednesday catches him at the Grand Canyon where she ties him up, and that's where she discovers that, Cyrus Strange is Bill Hader's character's name. Discovers that Cyrus Strange is behind it and has been hiring him to, and she ties him up. And then at the end of their phone call, he's like, "Oh, and where's Wallace Shawn's character. Cut to Wyde, he's gone, and she's like, oh, I let him go. And it's like, what, you let him fall to his death? And I was like, this is going to come back, right? Like, we're going to get a post-credit scene where Wallace Shawn's character falls into some water, right? Right?
Did we? Like I turned the film off at the earliest convenience.
No, I don't. So did I. But no, I stayed at least till the animated credit sequence was over. But so she just murder a man.
What? I mean, you didn't take her threat seriously. She's been talking about murdering everyone.
Yeah, but of all the characters in the film, I thought Wallace Shawn was like just sort of like a chess piece. Like, he's not.
Wallace Pawn.
Deserved Wallace Pawn, Richard. Like, I don't think Cyrus Strange gets killed at the end of this.
No, he like turns into a mutant thing. No, then they drop him to his death.
There you go.
Which characters in animated films always fall into the death.
It's because it's non-violent.
Yeah, like once you notice it, it's the reality of it. Think of like any animated film, bad guy probably falls to his death.
Anyone.
Name one, AJ.
Inside Out.
Yep.
Inside Out. Yep, Riley falls to her death. Riley, the villain of Inside Out.
She gets turned inside out. I mean, Bing Bong, arguably.
Bing Bong doesn't fall to his death and is not the villain, but does get left behind in a very, like, how Disney kills off characters ways. Although, have you seen the poster for Inside Out 2?
Yeah.
And Bing Bong is, like, on it?
No, he's not.
I think he's at, like... infers Bing Bong's in it, which I was like, don't bring Bing Bong back. But there's a joke, well, not even a joke, just a moment in this movie
such
that
a, like,
I reckon
minimalist poster. And there's a new character who maybe you're confusing with Bing Bong.
Right. Well, they look like Bing Bong.
Yeah.
There's a joke in this. Well, it's not even a joke. It's just a moment in this movie that I detested. And I think it's a really good example of the shortcomings when you're a new writer adapting something that many people before you have worked on and someone else made up, which is when she's talking to Cyrus Strange on the phone. He's like, I think I might actually be your dad. And he's like, I named you Wednesday after my favorite poem. And she goes, Wednesday's child is full of woe, which is that poem that's like, Tuesday's child is full of grace.
And it's also actually what Charles Adams named her after.
Which, exactly, I think, don't fucking, like, it comes off as like, actually, I know that this piece of trivia that Wednesday was named after, you know what I mean? And it's like, that's the joke. You don't need to actually explain the reference, explaining a reference. It's dissecting the frog. Like, it takes it from being a smart character reference to like bragging that they knew about it, you know? Yeah.
That was my favorite bit of the film.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, oh man, I get the reference too.
Oh,
watching that, I was like, AJ probably won't pick up on that. Like, me in this movie is smart and AJ is dumb.
Yeah.
So a couple of notes from Rachel here. So Morticia's lack of reaction to Pugsley's cries for help is similar to a comic wherein Pugsley looks on as Morticia tells a perturbed Wednesday, well, don't come whining to me, go tell him you'll poison him right back. It's a funny line. And there's a chance that the ending shot is based on a Charles Adams cartoon where everyone in a movie theater has turned around to stare at the reader as an actress screams on the movie screen. I don't think there's a huge chance given the lack of notes for the movie, but there's a chance.
I mean, the fact that Rachel is struggling to give us references for these two animated films, I think that says it all. Like this is such a departure from the source material, and I think it ruins it because it's like it's
the source material
that
I was generally a fan of in broad terms.
Broadly a fan of. But, like, in the sense that, like, they dial down the macabreness of it. Mm. Like, Wednesday has character growth, which I think is, like, that's a modern approach to, like, a very specific type of character.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen the Netflix
series. Yeah, I imagine she has character growth in that.
but also, that series, it's not like that series was received well either. Like,
I think it's pretty beloved.
Really? I read terrible reviews for it.
Yeah, I think it's, well, I say beloved, I mean like Netflix beloved. Certain people loved it. It's getting a season two. It breathed new life into the character, made Jenna Ortega a bona fide star. And yeah, I think like the SAG-AFTRA had to send out a memo being like, you're not allowed to dress as Wednesday Adams for Halloween during the strike.
Right.
Because
and they're 72% on Rotten Tomatoes, so that's about as good as...
Yeah, I mean, it became like the second highest watched thing, like, very quickly. I think, like, yeah, anyone I know who has watched it enjoyed it, to say the least, you know.
Okay, I read that it was bad. That's what I got told. The first episode of the show is called Wednesday's Child is Full of Woe. Stop fucking telling me! I get it! I get the reference! It stops being clever if you draw attention to it.
Wow.
In fact, woe appears in all of the titles of the show. Whoa.
There is one bit in the film which I wonder if you picked up on. So there's a bit where Wednesday and Lurch are walking through Death Valley, California, and they stop in front of a crossroads sign. And did you happen to pick up on any of the directions they were pointing?
Brother, I was checked out by this point almost entirely.
Well, I'm like going to give you...
Sitting in front of moving colours on a screen and not taking any of it in.
Yeah. The like you were trying to imagine an apple. Just... It's just really just amorphous
colors. I tried
colors.
To give myself aphantasia so I didn't have to see this movie.
So the crossroads sign, and I noticed this, but I've got them written down here. I'll give you a direction on the sign, and you have to tell me what's a reference to. So first of all, you got Crystal Lake.
Friday the 13th.
The Overlook Hotel.
The Shining.
Amityville.
Amityville.
Amityville what?
Horror.
Yeah. Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Haddonfield, Illinois.
That's Halloween.
Yeah, and last one is The Lighthouse.
What, from The Lighthouse?
That's from The Fog from 1980. Yeah. But yeah, there's a fun little horror movie reference there for you.
And a movie that's absolutely embracing its horror movie roots. trying to make it squeaky clean at all.
So there's been... as I mentioned, the Addams Family is a media empire. There was a musical, which Nathan Lane played Gomez Adams. This was in 2010. And like,
he's also in Addams Family Values, yeah, Nathan Lane.
Exactly. And obviously we've mentioned at length the TV show Wednesday, which Tim Burton created and directed, I think, the first 4 out of 8 episodes. And Fester's voice actor, Nick Kroll, from the animated ones, has said that he plans to pitch an idea for a third film, possibly for 2023, so he hasn't got long. He mentions that he would love the third movie to be about the Addams Family going on another vacation, attending space or Comic-Con.
Attending space.
Yeah. What did you think of Nick Kroll as Fester?
I kind of feel strange about Nick Kroll. Like, when I first discovered Nick Kroll, it was in a little-known TV show that you know a lot about because I always talk about it to you.
You won't shut up about it.
Called The Life and Times of Tim, in which the subtleties of his vocal performance in that show is... Mm. God, it is... So it's breathtakingly funny sometimes. and then he got bigger and more famous, and whenever he's in something now, I'm kind of like, eh. Yeah. It's just Nick Kroll doing one of his two voices.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, if you've seen Big Mouth, I think you've seen the entirety of his vocal repertoire.
Also, do you know who his dad is? Do you know about this?
I know he's a blue link on Wikipedia.
Yeah, he is Nick Kroll's dad is a billionaire who helped defend Harvey Weinstein or something. Like it's like comically bad for someone like Nick Kroll, who's like one of these comedians which feels like they represent the like roll in the mud working class almost.
So now it's time for us to pitch our own continuations of the franchise. AJ, what have you got for us?
So, obviously, I'm going with what other famous phrases begin with the word family.
Yeah.
And, like, Addams Family Values, Addams Family Reunion. And there are, you know, there's... And I'm sorry if this is your one, Richard. There's Addams Family Feud, which I thought was too easy. and I thought Richard will do that one. but then I think the one that I would like to see, and I'm not going to do, like, and here's who I'd cast, because the Wednesday show has... Like, there is that already.
Yeah, there is
the modern casting of it. I think that the most exciting one to me would be Addams Family Secrets.
Yeah, nice.
And I think that the modicum of plot I came up with it for is, like, Wednesday learning everyone's secrets and using it to blackmail and, like, get what she wants because she's holding everyone's information at ransom. Yeah.
Yeah. So I should have gone first.
Mine's Adam's Family Feud.
No, so mine, very similar. I was worried you were going to say it. So mine actually came to me in a dream. And I'm not like, I'm not joking.
Awesome. The best continue the franchises come to you in dreams.
So I had like a hazy fog of a dream. And then I woke up and I was like, I need to write this down. And so I wrote down three simple words.
Yeah.
Adam's Family Guy.
Yes. 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 Didn't even occur to me, dude.
Like when you said this is probably your one, I was like,
no, I would never take that. That's too good of a joke for me to just casually. I didn't even think of it, dude. That's amazing.
That's all I've got.
Adam's Family Guy. We brought it back to Family Guy.
Yeah. Even though I'm a Scrubs guy now.
Yeah, Richard's, everyone, for those keeping track at home, Richard, no longer a Family Guy guy. He's now a Scrub.
It is now time for us to rank that franchise, and we're going to be doing something it's been a while, I think, since we've done. We're going to have to do two separate rankings, because these are two distinct, different canons.
And okay, well, are we counting Reunion as part of the trilogy, or is it its own thing?
What do you think?
I'm more inclined to say it's technically part of the trilogy.
Oh, it's a different production company, though.
Yeah, but the fact that they brought back Lurch... to me, that means it is like, does production company trump that? Is it just like they brought back the guy?
Mm. Let's not include it.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's our list, so we can do what we want.
Do whatever the fuck we want.
So, where is the Addams Family and Addams Family Values going?
I reckon, like, give me something. So, we're well above the Nymphomaniac.
Is it better than Gremlins?
Fuck, what a weird franchise to give me to compare it to, dude.
Okay, well, I thought another horror comedy two-film franchise might...
Where is Gremlins on the list?
63.
Above and below what?
Below Scary Movie, above Jaws.
It's a strange place for... We think Scary Movie is better than Gremlins?
Yeah, I guess. Is it better is it better or worse than The Raid?
It's not as good as The Raid.
Okay, so somewhere in the 10 between those. Is it better or worse than Happy Death Day?
Yeah, about there. Maybe better.
Is it better or worse than Lilo and Stitch?
Better than Lilo and Stitch.
Okay, but is it better or worse than The Matrix?
It is worse than The Matrix, but better than Lilo and
Stitch. Okay, 57 we've got.
I love Becca. I love that my life has this podcast in it where I'm led to saying the sentence, it's better than Lilo and Stitch, but not as good as The Matrix.
And what about the animated films? Are they better or worse than George of the Jungle?
Yes, better, I think.
Are they better or worse than the live-action 101 Dalmatians?
No, they're worse than those.
Are they better than A Cinderella Story?
Yes.
Are they better or worse than Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? The worse. Original... Worse. Okay, so they go between Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and A Cinderella Story at 163.
I haven't felt this good about a ranking in years, Richard. I feel like these are very good places to put these two little sub franchises.
All right, so all that's left to do now, we didn't mention this at all on the podcast, really. We spoke briefly about it, but this was our first Thanksgiving episode, I believe.
Ah, true. Yeah nice. Coming out after Thanksgiving, but don't worry about that.
You worry about that. AJ, where can people find us? And then while I pull up my random number generator, because it's time to randomly select a franchise.
I believe it's my turn to make you guess.
Okay.
I haven't made you guess in ages. So this is where we randomly draw a number that correlates to a franchise on our list, and that will be the next franchise we cover on the Cult Popshire podcast. But if you enjoyed this episode, then please consider supporting us at all the places. You can do that by following us on Twitter and Instagram. You can jump in the Discord, which there'll be a link to in the show notes. We'd love to hear people's experiences with Adam's Family generally. That'd be cool. And if you want to support us financially, you can get on Patreon, patreon.com/cultpopshire, where you get access to exclusive extra podcasts. You get to tell us which movies to watch. You even get to be involved in something called the post-credit scene coming at you after this music ends. So stick around for that. Richard, give me a number.
All right, your number is
7.
I can't believe this. All right.
All right, it's a franchise AJ can't believe. What could it be?
So, It is a franchise which I believe is getting a TV show sequel. It's two films, but there's a TV show sequel coming out.
Yeah.
It is so fucking weirdly closely related to something we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm talking less than 10 minutes ago we were talking about this.
We haven't had a coincidence like this in a while.
This is one for the books. although you do talk about this a lot, so yeah. Maybe it's not surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've already worked it out.
What is it, Richard?
Join us in 2 weeks' time, where we will be covering the two films which I have actually very recently watched in the Ted franchise.
Correct. We are covering Seth MacFarlane's Ted and Ted 2.
If you're wondering why we just were able to roll, I guess this is inevitable. Yeah, we have to. I mean, I've been wanting it to happen for a long time. I'm very excited. I just watched these films like when I was in Leeds with Carlisle and Jess. We watched them. If you're wondering how we were able to roll a two-film franchise just then as well, because we said years ago we took them off the list. We're not doing Netflixmas this year, but we do have something adjacent coming up, and so we
have a non-denominational holiday movie watch to do.
Yeah, because we have extra films to watch for that, we do have a franchise list for occasions like this, where we need something a bit easier to get through.
Mm.
And it's just entirely Ted. It's just Ted.
It's all Ted. There's a lot of good franchises on here that I kind of like. Two film franchises that would be like. I'm looking now. Like Sin City is on here. I made the poster for Sin City 2 my like cover photo when it was released. Then never saw it. Anyway, that's the Addams Family. Tune in next time for us talking about Ted. That'll be a lot of fun.
And you'll be running that as well.
Exactly, and I'll interview MacFarlane himself. I'll track him down and I'll say, you've ruined my life. So tune in for that and stay tuned for the post-credit scene coming at you after this music ends. Da-da-da-da, snap, snap. Da-da-da-da, snap, snap. I hope this wasn't too ookie spooky for you.
The Cult Popshire family.
Welcome along to the post-credit scene, everybody. This is a segment at the end of each episode where if you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/coppops, you get to give us something to talk about in this, the post-credit scene. Richard, who's it from and what is it?
So today's one comes from Dan Connell, who says, what is the strangest movie theater experience you've ever had?
I reckon it was when I saw Smile.
Wow, and they kept farting?
They kept farting.
They?
The characters in the film. No, there were these teenagers there, and I hate that I'm old enough now that I'm like complaining about teenagers in public. But they were talking the whole time. There was a point where, and I did actually find this kind of thing. One of them farted at one point, and they all laughed at him. But there was a point that actually was pretty funny to their credit, which is when one of the characters blurted out, "Are you serious right now?" Which at that time was like a TikTok meme of, "Are you serious right now?" And an actual character said that in the film, and they cracked up, and a little smile appeared on my face, and I went, "God damn it!" And like it was so disruptive that I nearly went up to them after the film and was just like, "You guys were young when the pandemic happened. So you don't know what you're supposed to do in a movie theater."
Oh, that is a big thing.
I wanted to be like, you were horrible to share a movie theater with.
I've asked this before, but was the farting the smell or the audio that was annoying you?
The audio. I was too far away to smell it.
Someone farted when I went to go see The Whale. Like, The Whale was a weird experience. There was one, and I think this is a pretty universal experience, but like, there was... every time there's a few times when Brendan Fraser in that film is like shirtless or naked and you see like his body and like the film is framed like this is grotesque and because it was announced recently that Darren Aronofsky is going to be directing a Elon Musk biopic, but it's like you look at any Darren Aronofsky film, he is disgusted by his protagonist, and so I'm like, maybe he's kind of the perfect director for it. But the is every time he was shirtless or you saw him naked, this one person in my screening would just crack up. And it's like supposed to be like the saddest part, like, you know, this is the crushing reality. There was also just during a quiet moment, someone farted and like loud enough that like a group of people cracked up. And but this woman behind me was eating like a little like tub.
She's
of,
eating a fart?
Eating like a tub of ice cream and yeah. was like it, like in the seat directly behind Jess, I think. And so like right next to me and was eating it so fucking loudly. That, like, when she finished it, I literally said to Jess at normal volume, thank God. Just so that she would know how infuriating it was to listen to you to eat ice cream for 15 minutes.
These are all cinema-going habits that would be annoying anyway. But doing them in the whale is, like, extra, like, insensitive,
yeah,
right?
It's insane.
I went to see Series of Unfortunate Events in, what, 2005?
Yeah.
With a tummy bug. Like
yeah,
had
so
been
you
throwing
were the
up.
One.
I had been throwing up for days earlier, and I really wanted to see it. My dad took me to it, and I'm there watching Jim Carrey be like, "I am Count Olaf," and I had to have like a cold water bottle like on my stomach to
wow.
cool it down because I was feeling so ill.
Hmm. I remember during Return of the King that like Gollum and. I don't know that like they'd all just reached the top of Mount Doom, and I was like, I really need to pee to mum, and she was like, oh, like the movie's clearly almost over, and then like have it like you know contemplating peeing in my drink or whatever because I had to go that badly, and it's like that movie famously takes a long time to end. It's like when they get to the top of Mount Doom, it's probably still what like an hour to go on the film,
probably yeah.
Insane times. The one that strikes to mind, not necessarily as like strangest but like worst, was live action Lion King, where it was just like horrific. I couldn't hear the trailers of the film, which were louder than the film, because people on the other side of the cinema were like talking and like I you know, like talk during the trailers, but it's like, I can't believe you are that loud. And then that didn't stop at all. 20 minutes of trailers, because it was at like a cinema chain that I don't usually go to for that part of, that's part of the reason why, because they play trailers for like 20, sometimes 30 minutes. And then people 20 minutes into the film, so 50-ish minutes after the scheduled start time of the film, were coming in late, getting their torches out on their phone to try and find their seat. And then when, spoilers for The Lion King, Mufasa died, half the cinema took flash photography of the scene.
Hell yeah.
Insane.
Hell yeah.
Just
TikTok
insane,
generation.
Insane thing to do.
When I saw Uncharted, these two reasonably drunk dudes in probably their 50s were in the foyer with me and my buddy, and they were like, "Well, you guys looking forward to Batman?" We're like, "Yeah, man. Please don't talk to us." And then during the movie, they were just talking so much that we then also had to cross a weird social boundary in asking the people who had already talked to us and established a rapport with us to be quiet. So immediately, the boundaries of this new relationship
like, hey,
changed. And
we're buddies here. Can you be quiet?
Can you please be quiet? And then one of them went out and just didn't come back for the rest of the movie. And then we left and he was outside and he was like, "Oh, I tried to get back in, but they locked the doors. I went out for a smoke. What happened in the end?" And we were just like, "Good guys won, man," and left. And he clearly wanted like a detailed rundown on what happened at the end of Uncharted.
But it's also like the doors weren't locked. They were probably just pulled and you were pushing on them.
No, it's those automatic ones. So the buttons on the inside of them all.
I'm probably just going to cut before you correct me.